Word of mouth.
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 Well, definitely.
Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Iodized salt is so common today that you may never have considered the two elements separately. This was not always the case. In 1924, iodine was first added to commercially sold salt in the U.S. to reduce the incidence of goiter, or swelling, of the thyroid gland. Within a decade, the average IQ in the U.S. rose 3.5 points. In areas that had been iodine deficient, IQ scores rose an average of 15 points. A new paper from the National Bureau of Economic Research traces the leap in IQ to iodized salt. Max Neeson is strategy reporter for Business Insider, where he wrote about research into IQ increases as a result of iodized salt. Max, what happened?
So this is something that happened back in 1924 when there was really a well-established link between iodine deficiency and the goiter in particular. One of the ways that the nation at large sort of found out about this was one of the data sources from the paper, physical examinations for World War I. A significant portion of people were actually turned down from the military because they had goiter so large that they actually couldn't be fitted for a proper uniform.
Mm.
And they discovered, you know, that this was very much a geographically based problem. So, for example, in one place in northern Michigan, there were more people rejected from the Army for this particular medical difficulty than anything else. So they started to realize that people were very much iodine deficient in particular parts of the United States, places that weren't coastal, and interestingly, the Great Lakes region, because all the glaciers scraped away what was very rich, iodine-rich topsoil in favor of sort of ground-up rocks that had very little iodine at all.
I understand that it was in Michigan that they first began selling iodized salt, and Morton Salt Company pretty much took over from there and started selling it nationally.
Yep, that's exactly true. So it was public health officials in Michigan that first noticed and started to do a fairly local program. And then public health officials nationwide were, you know, we need to do this all over the United States. And since most of the salt in the country was made in Michigan, that meant that the rollout was pretty rapid and that iodine deficiency actually decreased very rapidly.
So, Max, iodine in salt was originally introduced to prevent goiter, but iodine actually affects the brains, especially the development of brains in infants. Now, when was the connection between brain development and iodine discovered?
That was a little bit later on. They actually had no idea that that was the case back in 1924. But over subsequent years, different researchers managed to sort of make that connection. One researcher in particular found that the average difference in IQ for an iodine-deficient population and a non-deficient population is as much as 13.5 points.
Yeah.
And it's something that happens in utero. If a mother is iodine-deficient, very frequently they're some pretty severe intellectual disability. And even if it's not severe, there's actually a notable delay or reduction in intellectual development.
Well, let's look at this study then. The researchers used Air Force enlistment rates to support their findings on residual exposure to iodine. So first, why is this source considered representative, and what were the findings?
The sort of two sources of data were first pinpointing which areas were most iodine deficient. That was the World War I physicals that I previously mentioned. The second source of data was taking a look at the results and scores from the Army General Classification Test, which is an early version of the test that enlistees still get to this day. World War II, the period that the most men enlisted, actually lined up perfectly with the years that iodine was introduced in salt. So it was 1920 to 1927, when men were 18 through their early 20s. So it's a perfect sample of people before and after iodine was introduced that were enlisting in very large numbers in the Army. Recruits from iodine deficient areas were 2.5 to 8.7% more likely to go into the Air Force than the general armed forces than before, especially given how few people go into the Air Force in the first place. This is really significant. And then from the average scores on the test, they were able to provide those estimates that you mentioned that the boost for iodine deficient populations was a full standard deviation or 15 points of IQ over the next decade or so.
And has this continued through the decades?
The effect was, from what the paper said, actually pretty rapid, given how quickly iodine deficiency was reduced in these areas. In particular, the take-up of iodized salt was most popular in areas that had high goiter. So you'd have seen those sort of developmental problems track down very quickly. And then, so they were interestingly able to extrapolate that on a national level to explain about a decade of what's called the Flynn effect, the fact that IQs nationwide have gone up by about 3 points every decade throughout the 20th century. So people sort of debate a lot about what might exactly cause that, that we educate more people, that we're able to think more abstractly. But even though it was a relatively small population, about the quarter of the United States, that was iodine deficient, the effect was so large that it might explain a full decade of IQ gains in the United States.
But there are a lot of other environmental factors that have changed since then. Exposure to lead levels, I'm thinking, in the past 50 years, too. How do they isolate iodized salt as the source for the boost in IQ levels?
That is something that's particularly difficult. It's always difficult to measure the effect of these sort of fortification programs because they usually happen as part of a much larger public health boost. But this actually happened in a very short time, and it was the first major food fortification program in the United States. So they were able to isolate that in terms of years, and through the data sets I mentioned, they were able to isolate a very geographically distinct population to see, you know, very much this independent effect that would have been really difficult if it had happened at another time or if you hadn't had that great data source.
Too much sodium chloride or table salt is associated with hypertension, with stroke, diabetes. Any negative side effects associated with the introduction of iodine in table salt?
The amount of iodine that renders you perfectly healthy versus iodine deficient is actually pretty small, which shows how distinct these very low iodine areas were. But there actually was a pretty negative health effect when you go from having almost no iodine in your diet to having it be a pretty significant component, which was certainly the case when iodized salt was introduced. You can have a condition called hyperthyroidism, which actually can be fatal. It's the overproduction of thyroxine, which ended up leading to as many as 10,000 deaths from 1925 to 1942 that can be tied pretty directly to iodization. It's mostly older age groups, which had been iodine deficient for a much longer time and were less healthy in the first place.
You mentioned that this was the most concerted use of nutrition fortification in America's history. Can we even imagine introducing an element like iodine to a diet today?
You know, it's actually happening all over the world right now. For example, in China, over a 10-year period, they managed to boost the rate of iodized salt from 30% to something in the 90% range. So it's happening today to this day. In the United States, it's actually a pretty well-established procedure. For example, we added vitamin D to milk in the 1930s that helped combat rickets. And then we added B vitamins to baked goods in the 1940s, which combated pellagra. At this point, I think we sort of know the micronutrients that are most needed and sort of what levels. It's kind of already there. For example, zinc and vitamin A as well. But throughout the world, this is one of the sort of easiest and most cost-effective ways to boost health in a population. It's not very expensive. It's easy to do on a mass scale and really has a massive and important effect.
Max Neeson, strategy reporter for Business Insider, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And you can find a link to Max's article about the connection between iodized salt and IQ gains. That's at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.